Podcast number three, week two. No, I'm not going to do the countdown. We're not going to continue to count these, but it is week two, and we are coming off of a wild weekend in College Station. I know you and I took part in it. We were game. We watched the end of the game together, and I saw you around town. What a weekend in College Station. Just from start to finish, college game day, you know, the anticipation built all week. I know how fired up you and I were heading into it, just like, you know, everybody with the Aggie ring out there. And then just to see people from all over the state and country descend on this, a lot of Clemson fans too, descend on this place and march into that stadium Saturday night. And boy, were we treated to one hell of a football game. Clemson 28, A&M 26, agonizing setback for our Aggies. Came down literally, Trevor, to the final snap of the ball game. It was a 2-point conversion for the tie, and I think you and I leaned over to each other and said, "Clemson has no chance if this game goes to overtime."
We had the momentum. You're right. It was an incredible atmosphere, and I appreciate everybody in Aggieland for giving me that experience. Last week was my first time tailgating, but it was a Thursday game.
Yeah,
Saturday, college game day. Kyle Field was rocking. We talked about it last week that we needed, you know, Kyle Field to step up and give Clemson a place that they couldn't replicate and all those different things. They did that. Incredible game. I wanted it to be close for confidence reasons, but we should have won that ball game.
Yeah.
But a lot of positives moving forward, and we'll get into that. Let's start, if you don't mind, because we've talked about him so much moving into this game. Texas player of the game this week. Let's start with Kellen Mond. Give me your thoughts on Kellen. What he did good, what he did bad, if he did anything bad, and what is he going to do moving forward to keep leading this program?
Let's start with what he did good because, I'll start with what he did bad. I don't think he did a single thing bad. I think it wasn't perfect because, as you know, as a quarterback, he's going to go look at film and he's going to see he kind of underthrew Rodgers one time up the middle where if he throws it in stride, it's a touchdown. He overthrew Courtney Davis on what would have been a touchdown. But it's like Jimbo said this week, you're going to throw the ball, drop back to throw about 45 times. Not every one of them is going to be perfect. What you look at is the end of the day, what did he do? So Kellen's going to go back and say, yeah, I could have done better, as you would have done after any of your games. But the reality is, when you're scoring that at home, that's a perfect 10 performance. I haven't seen anything like it from an A&M quarterback outside of Johnny Manziel, maybe in those – really that second game, those two games against Bama, that Cotton Bowl against OU, which you sat there and watched. Yeah. I mean, that was – but – outside of A&M's only Heisman winner since John David Crow, and there's been some great performances by quarterbacks. You've had a couple of them. That was the best I've seen because of who it was against, what the stakes were, the weather, and that D-line of Clemson's going further with that who it was against, and just the way it turned into this. They had to come from behind. And it turned into this wild back and forth. That fourth quarter he had, or that second half, Trevor, was as good as anything I'd even seen from Johnny. He was 16 of 21, I think, for 335 yards and three touchdowns in the second half against a Clemson team that is known for choking people out on defense. And I sat with you, and you were telling me, I can think I see a good pass, and I can think I can evaluate good quarterback play. I know I was sitting there next to you and Jake, and you guys couldn't believe it, some of the passes he was making, some of what he was doing. What did you think of his performance?
It was a wow performance. It really was. The stats that you just put up in the second half alone, I mean, that is just unheard of. But overall, 430 yards passing, three touchdowns, no interceptions. It was as clean of a game at the quarterback position that I've seen. And what impressed me the most is that every single ball outside of maybe one or two were catchable footballs.
Yeah.
He was accurate. It was raining. the conditions weren't all that great, and he was accurate with the football and gave his guys a chance to make plays. He had guys make huge plays.
He did.
Kendrick Rogers, we'll talk about him in a second, went up and got balls out of the atmosphere, yeah. Had some tip
There's
balls that we came up with.
Picture that I need to show you that's making the rounds on Twitter right now. It looks like he's 14 feet in the
Incredible.
Air.
I thought at one point he got bent over backwards and he broke every bone in his body, but just hops right up.
Gumby over
it
here.
It was an incredible confidence-building performance, but I think it even exceeds that for Kellen Mond. I think he solidified himself as the starter moving forward, obviously. Mm-hmm. And going back just a little bit, I think it was a four-play stretch that really did that. Yes, throughout the whole game,
yeah,
it was big time, but it was four plays. There was okay. The third down run where he scampered down the sidelines, gets the first down, cramps up. Mm-hmm. Nick comes in, sack fumble, not Nick's fault at all, yeah. Not Nick's fault. But then Kellen comes in, and they end up going to score. The next two plays we have on offense, Kellen throws it to, I believe it was Buckley down the sidelines, 70-yard gain. Very next play, evades the pocket. Touchdown to Kendrick Rogers. Yeah. That's four plays in a row that solidified him as the leader of that team, solidified his night, like you said, of one of the best nights we've seen from an Aggie quarterback yeah. ever, and solidified him as a starter, I think, moving forward. I loved what I saw out of Kellen Mond.
What did you think about – and I'll tell you what I loved about Kellen, too. Go back and watch that game and see how many times he got blasted when he was throwing it. And the O-line – we'll talk when Hunter comes in, Hunter Goodwin. I know he's an O-line tight end guy, so we're going to talk to him about maybe what went on in the trenches. But Kellen, what I loved is he took some real shots. What did you see, Trevor, as a quarterback? You've been in two college systems. What did you see about that Jimbo Fisher? What was your take on the game he called really from start to finish against a defense that, you know, is going to choke out most of the teams they play in 2018.
You know, I don't have any complaints on any of the calls except for one, and I'll get to that. Okay. I thought what he did a great job of is what we've talked a lot about coming into this week is being multiple in the offense. Did Jay Sternberger have a huge day? No. Did Travion Williams have a huge day? No, he didn't. But then it opened up everything else for Kellen Mond. Guys stepped up. Every time you look, it's where big chunk play here, a big pass play here, broken coverage here, middle of the field pass here, and then even just your average plays, you know, a little slant route on the outside that seems like a normal, you know, run-in-the-mill play. We made all those plays like we needed to. I love the fact that, yes, it's a pro-style offense, but it gives Kellen, the dual threat quarterback, the ability to get out of the pocket when he needs to. And we'll talk about, like you said, the O-line in a minute. I thought those guys put us in a position to win the ball game because allowing only four sacks against that front and giving us time to keep our eyes down the field, I thought was massive.
They blocked for an offense that gained 500 yards against a defense that's spearheaded by four potential first-round picks and probably two top 10 picks up front. So
yeah, so my only negative play of the day.
Yes, I want to hear that one.
I didn't like
it. Because there's two I'm wondering to see what you go with.
I didn't like the two-point call, and okay. I get it. I get that it didn't work out, and I don't. If it's the play I'm thinking of, which everybody runs, Clemson ran it a couple years ago in the national championship.
To Renfro. Yeah.
Catches it and everybody goes crazy.
Yeah.
It ends up working out. Nobody says a word. Yeah. The reason I didn't like it was because we had two receivers on the right side. We motioned Osmond over. He's obviously running the flat route. Yeah. It's a pick play. It's a man-to-man play. The outside two guys set a pick for Osmond coming under. He should be wide open. You toss it to him. We win the ball game. It was cover four, if I remember correctly. Yeah. They fell off on it. Jamon stops running. I don't know what the exact play design was. I've heard kind of from some insiders that we were supposed to do a little fake rollout and dump it to Jace Sternberger.
Okay.
Jace didn't get out on the play.
He didn't.
So it was a broken play, but golly, in that situation, you know, it's your two-point play. I know you already have it dialed up. You practice it all week. You always do. You have it on your script. It just wasn't my favorite play call if it was the pick play.
Yeah, and in my from watching it again, and I know you and I got really good video of it down in that end zone, so I've rewatched it from that angle a few times. And first of all, obviously, I would be willing to bet, as you saw what kind of competitor Jimbo Fisher is in the fourth quarter of that game. If you already did not know, if you've never watched him coach before, if you have, that wouldn't have surprised you. But I'm sure he just beat himself up for whatever time he allowed himself to do that in terms of, you know, there's probably 20 different calls. He said, oh, maybe I could have done this or that. I thought it also got blown up at the beginning, and that really – whether, you know, and Jace did kind of go down there. I think the defensive end or outside linebacker came on such a hard angle that Jace was unable to even get any of him. And you've been in that rollout. It wasn't designed for Kellen Mond to immediately retreat back to his 20-yard line. No. I mean, it was over from the start because of the pressure. I think if it would have been blocked, if that one guy would have been blocked, and I'm not sure whose assignment that was, if that one guy would have been blocked, maybe it was Jace hitting him and then going out, if it would have allowed Kellen to get his momentum, not dropping back so far and get his momentum going towards the defense, where a guy or two had to decide, do I stay back and cover? You know, if Kellen would have had that run-pass option, my guess, and I think someone said today that Jimbo was mentioning that earlier on Houston radio today, my guess was that that was designed for Kellen to run or throw it. And I think you have to do that. With quarterbacks like him, if you'd have been in that situation, you have to give your quarterback the option to put the pressure on the defense with his legs. And I think that got blown up so much that he wasn't able to do it.
I think you're right. And I think that, of course, we can sit here and play armchair quarterback. And if it would have worked out, we wouldn't even be talking about this play. The only thing I didn't like about it was the fact that everything that I've already mentioned, but also you cut the field in half and you start stringing it out to the sidelines. That's a tight window down there. And when you've got three receivers on that side, you've obviously got three defenders at least, plus the flowing linebackers, plus the D-line. There's too much over there that if it doesn't work, it's a one-trick pony. You don't hit the first guy, you don't have another option.
Kellen threw a pick in that same end zone last year late in the Bama game. And I don't know if it was a two-point conversion or an actual chance for them to get a touchdown, but rolling in that same direction, had to kind of flip it up, and I think it was Minka Fitzpatrick stepped in and picked it. Almost the same exact part of the field, but it was also DeShazer Everett picked off that pass there against Bama on that same attempted pick play, if that's what it was. I did think Jimbo Fisher called a brilliant game going all the way back to the first half. Those screen passes, just make those D-line, take advantage of them getting up the field, make them slow down a little bit, but also dump it over them. You know how hard it is. You've played with those guys, those big men to stop, turn, and chase, and they were doing that the whole first half. Trayvon, there wasn't much running room, but they stuck with it.
And they kept them honest.
They kept them honest. They really did. Kind of worn, I think they were worn out in the fourth quarter. We talked about it last week. The only equalizer with guys of that talent is if they're guys of that talent that are tired. That stood out to me, man, and I've been wanting to ask you this. Jerry Schmidt, Texas A&M, the Aggies look like they were ready to play a fifth quarter. Forget overtime. Let's play another quarter. Let's go. Clemson's body language was terrible. They were exhausted at the end of that game, and they were happy to get out of there. They were obviously happy, but they were fortunate to get out of there with a win, and they knew it. A&M had a lot more in the tank. Clemson didn't. You look at the fourth quarter alone, and the Aggies outgained them like 220-something to 50-something, and they outscored them 13-0 in the fourth quarter. Clemson was punt, punt, punt. They couldn't stop A&M save for the fumble out of bounds. So – what is it you've been telling me about him from the beginning? What makes Jerry Schmidt special, and is that what you can expect from this team from now on for A&M to be a fourth quarter football team?
There's no doubt. The reason I told you at the end of that game, if this goes to overtime, we're going to win this ball game, is because you could see it, like you just said. We were in better shape than them, and we had that mojo about us.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody says about Jerry Schmidt and his program. He is the best in the country at developing culture, accountability, a mentality. And you saw that. Yes, does Jimbo Fisher bring that as well? Absolutely.
I think it's the perfect marriage
between those two guys. Jerry Schmidt will not be in the headlines ever. He's, you know, going to kind of, he's a shorter guy. He's going to kind of get lost in the
He goes crazy on that sideline
now. But watch him. I want everybody to watch him moving forward. He's the first guy out there after guys make a big play. He's bringing guys aside whenever something goes bad and whispering something in their ear. I've heard it a couple times. It's magic. I don't know what he says, but it's magic. He is a difference maker for this program. The culture of that team, the feeling on that sideline when we were down in a big game, when we were coming back, all times of that game was different than I've ever seen it before. A lot of credit to Jimbo, but because of personal experience, and I'm a little bit biased, a lot of credit to Jerry Schmidt as well.
What, coming out of it, man, I mean, we can talk for 2 hours about this game easy. We're going to go about 25 minutes total. What are you more excited about this football team than you were before Thursday night? What was the biggest revelation to you watching that football game? And what's your lingering concern heading in? Maybe if not ULM, and maybe even if not Bama, because they're Bama, lingering concern moving through the SEC schedule.
What I love about this team, we showed.
Hold that thought. We got Hunter walking in. We're going to mic him up. And then I want you to start off answering that, and Hunter's just going to go right with us.
Let's do it.
Back. We took a little breather here, and we've got Hunter Goodwin, the big truth. Easy. Where's the little truth? I thought Ella wanted to come on as the little truth.
She calls me the big lie.
You're the big lie.
She's probably the big truth of the house, to be honest. So.
Well, we were talking, Hunter. We've talked a little bit about the game so far, and I'm going to finish up what I was just asking him, and you can feel free. I'd like you to answer this too. Biggest revelation of this football team that you didn't think you were going to see Saturday night, that you're convinced isn't a one-time thing, and moving forward you go, okay, that opened my eyes to this football team, whether it's a player or position. And then a lingering concern moving on into SEC play, something that you think A&M really needs to tighten up.
I loved the fact that we were a second-half team, and hopefully down the stretch that's going to convert into a second-half-of-the-season team as well, which obviously in the last couple years that's been a big concern. I mean, you look at Kellen Mond and what he did in the second half alone. I like the feel of that. And then, as we just talked about a lot, the culture of Jimbo and Schmitty and all those guys, what they bring, the feeling inside of Aggieland that everybody still has a whole lot of belief. I think that was really cool. My lingering concern is having to play ULM this week before we go to Bama. I don't want it to be one of those.
Right?
It's a trap game. I don't want it to be one of those deals that allows our confidence to take a shot at all, because we're on cloud nine right now. What do you think?
You know, Trevor, my first answer is going to be quarterback play. There were some things. I was not surprised the D-line played well. I was not surprised, totally surprised, the offensive line played well. But for me, I think if I watched the Kellen Mond from 2017 to the Kellen Mond that I saw, the risks he took, the tight throws that he made, the windows that he took shots on and released the ball – as I got to go to a game Sunday, I got up Sunday and flew to Minneapolis, and watching
private
that game,
jet.
Easy, and just listen. Just
we've been talking a lot
in the NFL,
those,
but the tight throws that you have to make, and trusting Trevor when you can't wait, you can't second guess. And to me, I saw a volume of improvement in his ability to just cut it loose and to take shots and to trust his receivers. That for me was the first surprise. And then what was your other question?
The concern, moving forward.
You know, this is a bit of a trap game, but I think, and you're already kind of seeing it play out, this is a team. I remember when I used to say there's so many things that when you watch the film that can be improved. That's what is so
exciting
for me, is that how well we played, but then when you watch the tape, there were a tremendous amount of errors. I think a big concern for me is just on this team is depth.
Yeah.
You really see a lot of slippage, if you will, at certain positions. I think Travion, a shocker for me, I'm going to give two answers to the first question.
I know where you're going.
His physicality, not in the running game, but he gave effort. And in the pro-style offense, I don't know if fans really understand this, but oftentimes this guy's protection is predicated on him picking up a sixth or seventh rusher. not just picking it up, but then staying with it. He not only was tremendously physical at the point of attack, but I thought at times when he got a little edgy, he gave great effort just enough to let Mond get the ball down the field. So he was lights out, impressive.
I love the fact that you're talking about a dude that's run for 200 yards in a game. Hell, you were handing it to him in a couple of Tennessee and Arkansas, and there was nothing to be had in that running game. And I love the way Jimbo stuck with it because it paid off in the fourth quarter there. But there was nothing to be had. And he took that ball 18 times and ran it into the teeth of that defense. But like you said, whether it was catching three passes for 40 yards or blocking, that he's indicative of what's going on in this team right now. All right, it's not my night as a runner. I'm going to find a way to contribute and help us win this football game. That the whole team performed like that Saturday night.
Well, and that's right. And there's always going to be your superstar of the game. This week it was Kellen. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the first week it was obviously Travion. And to be selfless enough to step in and be the unsung hero, you look at everybody and they're going to be, well, where was Travion? Why did he only have, I don't even know what it was, 2.1 yards per rush?
Yeah.
He was in there giving Kellen time to push the ball down the field. And obviously, Kellen had a huge night.
And, you know, the pro style is such a great system to evaluate because it's what you're going to do if you're fortunate enough to play on the next level. And you don't make a roster as a back if all you can do is run the ball. You don't make a roster because you got to be able to do more. Emmitt Smith, the great ones, they could line up and do what he did. And I think you may make a great point. There's going to be a lot of backs that don't have phenomenal number games against that defense.
Yeah.
There's a reason they got four first-round picks in the front four. But I thought he played very unselfishly and really stepped up. And that's just – I kept seeing that theme in play after play. What they asked him to do, whether it was with the ball or without, he did it and he did it well.
Now, another guy that I'd like to mention too that kind of fits in the same role that had a couple big catches this week but wasn't the – breakout player like he was week one, Jace Sternberger. Mm-hmm. A lot of split flow action, a lot of putting his hand in the dirt, a lot of blocking. I didn't really watch closely enough to see how effective he was in the blocking game, but he played a role. Overall idea of using Jace Sternberger, the mismatch that he creates and what we can use him for moving forward.
Couldn't agree. You know I'm a huge fan of that position.
We had the over-under.
There was a bet on how long it takes.
Hunter's been waiting to talk about the tight ends.
But no, I mean, you see the mainstay of this offense, a lot of three wides, and he did have his hand on the ground a lot. I thought he did okay. He's got some room for improvement. But to your point, he gives you a different element in the run game, and I think it played out more in the previous game. But so many of Travion's big explosive plays come on backside cuts. And that's the bread and butter, if you will, of having a tight end in the game, is if you can get a zone scheme inside and have him man up and be successful. And he doesn't always have to win, but if he can just set the edge, the things that that can do in an offense are huge, and they give a back a two-way go, making it very, very hard for you to be a defensive player because you're wrong either way you go. If you play the outside and contain, he can cut it backside. If you try to play soft, he can carry it out the front side. So really gives you an element that we haven't seen in this Aggie offense in a long time.
Who was your – we always talk about it because, you know, Hunter's point is always – he's not a hater of the spread offense. And you saw Jimbo Fisher's got plenty of spread elements there. But he Hunter, if you're not you, who was your tight end while you were at OU? Who were the tight ends there? Because OU is – I always think of them. They're a spread football team that runs the hell out of the football and utilizes that position. Who were your guys?
We had Brandon Green, who was more of an inline blocker, and then a kid named Taylor McNamara. Who ended up going to USC and having a pretty good career. Mm-hmm. And then Blake Bell.
Oh, the Belldozer.
Switched from QB to tight end, had a pretty good year. Mm-hmm. And then enter Mark Andrews, and he's a lot like Mark Jay Andrews.
You were between Gresham and Andrews.
Right. And I could see, you know, Mark Andrews is the Mackey Award winner. Phenomenal career at OU. I could see Jace turning into a guy like that and maybe even being a little better blocker.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
I think people get confused sometimes. I don't dislike the spread.
Yeah.
I dislike the spread with four wides and one back personnel because there's a reason on Sunday nobody does that as their mainstay because that crap don't work, right? Flip on the TV. You're running against NFL talent up front. It doesn't work. you got to get more than just a man on a man, and you have to account for six in the box, and you got to do it with a body for a body. When you got five blocking six, it isn't good enough, and it doesn't work.
So staying with personnel, if you don't mind, real quick. Because
I think you're going
staying
the same
in, yeah, staying in the pro-style offense, let's talk about number 12, the 12th man moving over to offense. First drive, I think it was, has a 21-yard catch. They hand him outside zone.
For and five good yards.
I think he bowls somebody over for 5 yards. What can he do in that position? And again, what can that do for Travion moving forward?
I think he's a huge element in this offense. And I remember, I forget how many years ago it was, we sat on this stage when I think he got – did he get awarded a scholarship or not?
Yeah, he did.
That. Yeah. And I think there was some chatter that – some wanted to kind of belittle that, and I think I distinctly remember saying that might be one of the best ROIs for a scholarship ever. You make a great point, Trevor.
That was when he was just a special teamer.
Well, a special teams guy, but now he's evolved, and you always told me, Lucci, what a great athlete he was in high school. Catches the ball well with his hands, smart guy, runs it up in there and a knock people flat out. I think he's it allows you to go in regular personnel, and you saw that introduced throughout the game. I think he is going to be hell on wheels, excuse my French, but you saw the Kansas City Chiefs the other day do with Sherman some wheel routes down the sidelines for big explosive plays. He's a good enough athlete with good enough hands.
Yeah.
I bet we see some of that get worked in and him making some big plays for this offense vertically.
He runs a 4.5, maybe low 4.6 at the worst. 40,
but can run.
And can run. He can run, and he's physical, and I agree with you. He can do all those things. It's pretty fun to watch.
He's a personnel guy that you would have never thought you have, but now that he's kind of proving. And he's still learning the position, Trevor. I mean, you can see he's still a little edgy on some things, but he's a smart kid and he's getting better. I think by week, six or seven, he's going to be a high functioning guy that you're going to see get more opportunity and make big plays for this offense.
Man, you mentioned that depth, Hunter, and I'm just sitting here going, get Michael Clemens back, get Clifford Chapman, because my concern is kind of wasn't the coverage, it's just. They miss some tackles on the back end, and it's a couple guys that have a history of missing tackles. So get the competition going over there and let the best man come out of it. Getting Chapman back at corner, I think, to push. And Michael Clemens at end. Now you've seen that versatility with Kingsley Keke. You can still do that, but then you can have Michael Clemens. And he might be the best-looking guy on that team. I still want to see him. He and Chapman are like kind of these mystery guys that we keep hearing about, but we haven't got to see play because they're hurt. But that depth is certainly something. As the year goes on, though, and guys like Sternberger, who's played two games, Gilly, who's played two games at fullback.
Trevor Wood, who's really been injured for the first two, but you're going to get more out of him as
well. Kellen being so young. Every receiver that made a play was a sophomore the other day. So I think this team, and we talked about Schmitty, they can just continue to ascend, and there's no moral victories this week. And you could tell you'd like this. Walking off the field, and there wasn't a single guy that
did. Complete and utter disappointment. And
Damian Craig looked like he'd been in a 15-round heavyweight fight coming off the field. I mean, and that's a coach. They left it out there, and they weren't happy when they went back and watched that.
I love the fact that you just mentioned maybe our weak point of our team right now being the secondary and some guys banged up. I don't think right now, which is phenomenal for week two, that we can pinpoint even a position group that is just blaring. Wow, we need to make big-time changes
now. There's no glaring weaknesses.
That's positive. That's big-time positive. But let's go back to the offensive side of the ball just real quick, staying down there in the trenches. What can you make of the offensive line this past week? We allowed four sacks, but that's easily the best defensive line we'll see all year. What do you think of those guys?
Trevor, I thought if you look at them as a collective group, I think you have to give an excellent grade. I thought they played with really good effort. They seemed to be assignment sound. You forget that. Let's look at the Starkle fumble. I mean, there was the left tackle was in a man scheme. Everybody was kind of zoning inside, and he got beat. But the dude that beat him is a first-round pick.
Top five.
Top five. And I would argue that the quarterback should have felt that, not to pick on y'all. And probably should have got down. But I thought as a collective group, and I want to specifically not – so it's not Dean that I'm dogging. I thought to a man, the front five played exceptionally well.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. after as much hype has been given to the front four of Clemson, after you play the way you did, you should have great confidence that you can line up and go against anyone that you're going to face in the SEC West on a go-forward basis.
What a great litmus. I mean, that's probably – I'm torn because I didn't know the receivers had it in them as a unit to make that many spectacular catches in one game against a quality defense. I didn't know they could do that this early.
Well, we talked about it before. We needed at least one guy to step up. And Cam Buckley, like Jamon Osmond, those are our guys. They're going to make the run-in-the-mill plays that they need to make, little pop passes. They're going to make competitive plays. We needed somebody to step up, and two guys did this week. Yes, Kendrick Rogers had a massive game. I want him to build on top of that.
Yeah.
Big confidence builder for him. But then you look at Courtney Davis, and he was making big plays.
Yeah,
Courtney's That's encouraging first
two
to
catches,
see.
His first two catches are a touchdown. I mean, it was career. A touchdown in the fourth quarter against the number two team in the country, and then a controversial – and I'm not – look, you got to hang on. You learn not to stretch out there. Like you always say, what do you say?
This is I'll never forget. This was Thurman Thomas. We had this young kid that returned a punt one time, and he just kept trying to make that extra yard. He ended up blowing out his knee, and he said, son, you got to know when the ride's over. Right, yeah, you got to know when the ride stopped, and you got to get it. But
the effort, I loved it.
The effort was amazing.
I'll tell you what else I loved. It was heartbreaking,
Lucci. We watched that. Me and my wife and I sat in bed last night. It was the good news. That game's it was on Sunday. It's been on Monday. It's been replayed. But you saw his just the way he felt after that play. He was literally in tears on the sidelines, just distraught. Love that kind of competition. You give me 50 of those kids, and I'll conquer the world. He cares.
This is what I want, and this is why the fans gravitated to this dude in just 1 year on campus. This is why you played the way you played. I just want guys
to care.
What A&M fans want more than anything is to believe that their players and coaches and the collective team. We've seen A&M teams that fans just don't like. And you could tell at one point in the year, and they just go, you know what, it's not just football. It could be any sport. It's why A&M fans embraced the softball team that went to the College World Series. Billy Gillespie was so adored here. They want – all we want as Aggies is to feel like the players and coaches want to have as much fight as we want to see, and that they want to win as bad or worse than the 12th man does. And to see Jimbo Fisher do what he did on that sideline and to see Courtney Davis, that's a great example. To see Kellen Mond stand in there and take hit after hit, that's all Aggies ask for. And I think they've got the coach is setting the tone for the whole thing. And Trevor and I talked about it earlier, or we're going to talk about it. That sideline, Jimbo Fisher defending his team after that call, I think you talk about – it was like a seminal moment between players and coach. We talked to the kids about it this week, and they said, hey, all that told me, not that I ever doubted it, but that he's got our back.
It was the loudest moment in the stadium the whole game, and it wasn't even a big play, which I thought was incredible. We were standing over there, and I, as a former player, as a bystander of the game, was unbelievably fired up. I was ready to run through a brick wall when he was doing that. I love that coming from Jimbo Fisher. He won over Aggieland.
That there was so much just when you watch body language, there was so much vivid evidence across the board from players to coaches of guys caring. There's one scene where my wife and I were watching this, and it was when Jimbo was losing his mind over a bad call. And it was getting heated. Yeah. There were dudes pushing guys back. Yeah. And I don't
that
know the
was
player,
the call. It was,
but there was one player stand there, and you could see him like, okay, you want to bow up and hit my coach? Let's go, bro. I'm ready.
Awesome. Yeah.
And I'm watching that body language, and I'm seeing guys on the sideline. I'm like, we're where we need to be, right?
You got Amber throwing pretzels at
you
people.
You got Amber throwing pretzels at fans. But you walk out of the stadium, as an A&M fan, it's been a long time for me when you walk out and you feel that good. And I know – listen, there's clarification. Disappointed we lost.
Yeah.
But when you walk out and you judge the team, you know they played hard. You know they represented everything that we as A&M folks, Aggies, stand for. Tremendous. The body language was right. Everything I saw just gives me so much hope and promise for the future.
Yeah, I think, Hunter, this was fun. We'll do it again. soon. We need Bama's coming up, so we may need to get you in here fired up.
I'm ready, bro.
Pre or post Bama, we'll give you a week to regroup. My favorite thing about that is that the Goodwins, the battling Goodwins, they sit in bed on a Sunday night and watch the Aggies play football. They watch the SEC Network replay. How was Minnesota, though? Seriously, you went back.
It was amazing, man. It was reunion. Great. It was great to be back and see a bunch of guys. It's sad it's been 20 years, but, yeah. I mean, got to see just
Some of those guys. He played that football team.
Randall McDaniel, Chris Carter, Randy Moss, Robert Smith, Leroy Horde. I mean, we had a group right there. You would have loved to play behind that offensive line. Todd Stussy, Corey Stringer, God rest his soul, Jeff Christie, Randall McDaniel, Dave Dixon. I mean, we had Pro Bowlers everywhere.
Randall there?
John was there. Got to see him. He looks like he could still play. So he was still the first thing he did is give me the old quick swim. But it was really cool. Cool deal.
Hey, I want to give one more bit of love too.
And I want to actually have Trevor opine on this. For me, not a defensive guru.
That's what I want to.
But I freaking thought Elko called the game of a lifetime.
Big time.
I mean, he put guys in position. They were always. The call was almost always right. And we made some – Wilson had some shots where he was a little overzealous.
Yeah.
I can't remember the other kid. I think it was
– Oliver came off the corner.
And his angle was bad. But he put those defensive kids in the right spot time and time again to make big, big, big game-changing plays.
I agree. My big thing going into the game is we can't allow – Clemson's offense that's running the two quarterback system to give up big plays. That's my only negative from that defense is we gave up too many big third down plays, but then we gave up too many shots down the field. And T. Higgins, number five for them, that dude is going to be a freak of nature.
I think A&M committed a better version of T. Higgins after that game, by the way. The rare losing locker room commitment from a five-star recruit. They got Demond Demas, who's the best receiver in the country for 2020.
Awesome.
But there's a lot of T. Higgins there.
But outside of that, I think you're right. I think they were where they needed to be. We had a few missed tackles, but not many. But the scheme overall, fantastic.
I'll tell you what I love too. He just started heating it up more and more as the game went on. He forced the true freshman out of there. You know, true freshman quarterback. Go sit down.
And you got to give Kelly Bryant credit. He was big tough. Time down the stretch.
He really did. But he threw some nice balls. Some of
too.
The things that Elko did schematically, it even fooled Herbstreit. He lined the two linebackers up in a double A gap blitz, and he blitzes the strong side guy, but then takes a weak side guy to cover a strong side slot receiver, which even fooled. The commentators were bewildered by it. But
that's NFL stuff.
That totally NFL stuff. Yeah. But that's the kind of stuff where it almost tricks what you're taught to read, and it would make you think, okay, well, there's my outlet. Well, what's a long-haired Clemson quarterback?
Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence. Had he not gotten nervous and got some pressure, he was about to let that ball go, and it would have been a pick six. Mm-hmm. So I just thought he did some very exotic things that unless you're a highly cerebral quarterback, you're going to be lulled to sleep to make some big mistakes against his defense down the road.
That's a great observation. And the other thing I loved about it too, if you really go back and look at the big plays, third and 15, that was set up where, the guy catches
the
slant. They
should
have tackled him at 10, 12-yard gain. A swing pass to Travis Etienne. They had him bottled up. They miss a tackle. He gains 18 on a third and 13. The deep ball push-off. I mean, to me, that was the worst call of the night.
I agree.
I agree. I think way worse than the fumble through back the end zone because it was egregious. I mean, you might – get away with a single hand. I've never in my career at any
two-handed
just throw the guy down.
And it was a safety. It wasn't like the one-on-one matchup, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they weren't
coming over the top. They kind of run into each other, and then two hands,
and
to the ground.
And the side judge was 8 yards.
Oh, he was looking right at it.
He was like looking right at it. So I thought the one of the worst calls.
So you look, and then the other one was the bomb. The bomb. Renfro. Over Caper Smith.
That can't happen.
Who had a nice game.
He did have a really good
game. He got beat on that play.
That's a slot receiver catching
40 yards downfield.
Yeah,
that to me was the one play that I'd say that you know, that was a bad – the other ones were like missed tackles. The touchdown was an amazing catch, but there was no reason – the way the defense was drawn up, it took an amazing catch to beat it, and they should have had him tackled right there.
Yeah, and you're talking about Trevor Lawrence first play in. Yeah, that should never turn into a touchdown.
So to me, the scheme, if you go back and look, that you got to be going, it was the execution. Here's what you didn't see, and we've seen it so long, and you were on some teams that did this. Bus.
Right. There were no big mental
hell errors. If there were bus Saturday night, it was Brent Venables' defense, because A&M had guys wide guys open
in the middle of the field, all over the place.
Yeah. All right, I want one more thing.
I just thought too that the thing that was so noticeably different, and it's an obvious thing to say, but just if you listen to the commentators and if you were in the stands watching and listening to the fans, as we got down 14-3, as we got down, everybody thought we were going to do and just shut it down. Mm-hmm. We're mailing it in, checking it in. But every time they punched us, we punched right back. And just that will to keep playing and to keep and not worry about the scoreboard, that was refreshing, and that's new. That's not something that's existed. We were either a front runner that got out big and won. Rarely were we able to just keep grinding and keep taking gut shots and come back and keep fighting.
There are things that are going to – you can carry over to every – opponent. Like, it doesn't matter that it was Clemson or if it was ULM. I thought it was, you know, things you can take from just being Clemson, I would say, was the O-line holding up against them. How does that bode for Mississippi State, Auburn, Alabama, LSU? It bodes very well as the year goes on. But then there were things that have nothing to do with the opponent. The way they fought back in the second half, the way they didn't get down, Kellen Mond standing in under pressure. You know, there were a lot of things. I want to ask you guys last thing before we go, because we can't not mention it. A&M pushed, I think, in the line of scrimmage battle.
I agree.
The Clemson D-line got the best of the A&M O-line, although they played a hell of a game. The Aggie defensive line whipped Clemson up front. They gave up 115 yards rushing. 30 of that came right there in the fourth quarter on one play by the quarterback. How long has it been, guys, since A&M has stuffed – a real running game, and they stuffed him. I thought Kingsley Kiki was a man
all
Saturday.
Over the place.
I thought they played great. Agreed. Across the board, the defensive line is very promising group. They played extremely well. I think the pass rush is going to continue, and it'll get better. That stuff to me always comes in waves. You go through bouts where it doesn't work, and then boom, in some game you'll have four sacks back to back to back. But I thought overall very physical up front. And as I said, after what they give up in the first game, 24 yards rushing, I said, well, here's the deal. That goes into your total statistical computation. So when you start calculating that, go out and have another 24, 25-yard rushing game. You hold Clemson to, what'd you say?
115.
115. You wake up and you're averaging about 65 yards a game in three games with Clemson in the mix. So I think you're going to – I mean, if you do that and you can stop the run like they did, you're going to always have a chance to beat anyone you play for the rest of the season. I don't care who it is.
We've got to remember, we're an unranked football team and still unranked right now. And we're talking about competing with the number two team in the country. I think, again, yes, it's a heartbreaker, and it kind of bugs me that we're maybe too positive coming away from it. But I think there is enough positives coming from this game that we can run with it, and hopefully it produces a lot of good things this season. But as we were going to mention, and we've talked about a lot before, a lot of positive things in the years to come.
Yeah, I think more than anything, it's we're sitting here positive today because it's the best you've felt about the direction of the program, and not just the long-term future, but the short-term. This is a loss that's going to sting at the end of the year. You know, if A&M continues to play well and they finish 8-4, then you go – you'd have won that game and beat Clemson, who's a top five team. You'd probably be in a New Year's Six bowl at 9-3. You know, right. So or if you end up going 9-3, and you say you could have been a lot of. It's going to sting. It's not going to go away, especially for those guys playing. But I think what changed, Trevor, is the narrative around here and why we're all so like giddy right now.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome.
Is it changed the outlook for this year where you looked and said, like you said earlier, or you know, that what quote did you tell me before we went on the air? It was You can play. You can beat anybody.
We may not beat everybody on our schedule, but we can beat anyone on our schedule, yeah. And I think that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, yeah. I agree, totally agree.
Yeah. And we'll talk. We'll have another big one to preview real soon with Bama. Trevor, I'll see you Thursday. We're going to talk to Peter Burns, Mike Evans, and we're going to go around college football. So we'll be back. Trevor, Hunter.
Hunter, great to have you on, man. This has been
brother.
Awesome.
Good to be with
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Gig'em Aggies.
Hey.
Whoop.
That's just our thing. We got to come up with something better. I mean, I think it's
just so bad.
Maybe I got to put more oomph.
Yeah, you got to do like a loud.
Like watch.
Some kind of yell leader deal.
Woo! There it is.